Bodine checked his guns. He usually carried his guns with the hammer over an empty cylinder. He took a moment to fill up the 6 holes in each Colt and slipped his guns back into leather, the hammer thongs off, and walked out of the barn. Bodine looked up and down the wide street of the village. A couple of general stores, a saloon, an apothecary shop, and a cafe. That was it. Bodine walked across the street to the cafe and stepped inside. The menu was simple. Bodine ordered beef with potatoes and gravy, apple pie, and a pot of coffee. He sat with his back to a wall and his eyes focused on the batwing doors of the saloon across the street. When his food came, he ate slowly, savoring the taste of food he hadn't had to cook himself. A citizen wandered into the cafe, started to sit down, then took a look at Bodine. He'd left the cafe at a fast walk and crossed the street, entering a general store. A few seconds later, the store owner pulled down the shades and locked his store doors. Bodine put some coins on the table and stood up, settling his hat on his head, conscious of the eyes on him from the kitchen of the cafe. The short street was devoid of life, human or animal. The 2 horses that had been tied at a hitch rail in front of the saloon had been moved to a safer place, hopefully out of the line of fire. Bodine walked slowly across the dusty and rutted street, stepping up onto the boardwalk in front of the saloon and pushing open the batwing doors. Inside, he stood for a moment, allowing his eyes to grow accustomed to the sudden dimness of the beery-smelling barroom. He began spotting and locating the few people in the saloon. The 4 men sitting at a table were locals. The slick-looking man dressed in a black suit was a gambler. The 1 man who sat alone was fat, and with a sour expression on his face, looked like he might be having troubles with his wife. Utah Jack Noyes stood at the bar, holding a shot glass of whiskey. He smiled at Bodine. Talk was that Utah Jack was the son of a minister and had a good formal education behind him somewhere back east. But he'd raped and then killed a girl and had to go on the run, changing his name to avoid the law. He'd become a feared gun hand. Bodine didn't recognize the men who stood on either side of Noyes. Bodine walked to the bar to stand at the curved end closest to the door so he could face the 3 gun slicks. The bartender mopped his glistening head with a questionable-looking bar towel.
What'll it be?
Nothing. You can get out of the way.
Place suddenly started stinking like an engine.
One of the men moved away from Utah and the other man.
You're probably smelling yourself. Way you look, you haven't bathed in 6 weeks. Is that fleas I see jumping around on you?
I've been wanting to meet you for several years, Bodine. I'm Jack Noyes.
Better known as Utah. I saw you 3 years ago over at Silver Bowl.
Did you now? Oh, yes, I remember. The Mac Kenny boys.
That was pretty good shooting.
Yes, it was, wasn't it?
Considering you shot one of them in the back as he was leaving a barber shop.
I seem to recall I shot him from the side.
His gun was still in leather with the hammer loop in place when I saw him.
Are we gonna have a debate in society here, or are we gonna kill this punk?
Relax, Jones. Plenty of time. The impatient one is Jones, Bodine. The other one is Calloway.
I'm not impressed. Now, why do you want to kill me, Utah?
Now, there is an interesting question, Bodine. I suppose it should be addressed. A man should know why he's about to die.
For sure, Utah. One of us is about to die. Maybe all 4 of us. Because you know damn well I'm not going down easy. I'm going to get lead in every one of you.
That is a risk that men of our profession must always consider, isn't it, Bodine?
Your profession, Utah. I never ask for the name of gunfighter.
My, how noble of you.
Tom Thomas paying you boys to kill me?
I never heard of the man.
You're a damn liar.
Bodine's slug took the tall gunfighter in the belly, doubling him over and slamming him to his knees on the sawdusted floor. As soon as he had shot Utah Jack, Bodine dropped behind the edge of the bar and crawled behind it.
Where the hell did he go?
Bodine holstered his Colt and scanned the underside of the bar. Sure enough, the barkeep had stowed a sawed-off shotgun within arm's reach. He reared back the hammers. Jones, perforated, tipped into another man. Bodine rolled to the far end of the bar and came up with both hands full of 44s, just as Calloway turned, a wild look in his eyes. Calloway's shirt front became stained with blood, and the man sank to his knees, the 45s slipping from numb fingers. Bodine quickly reloaded one Colt and stepped out from the edge of the bar. The saloon was filled with eye-smarting gun smoke. Quickly, Bodine reviewed the situation. Jones was unconscious and dying, his right side horribly mangled from the double charge of buckshot. Calloway was dead, on his knees, with his head pressed against the foot railing.
Damn your eyes, Bodine.
Utah Jack tried to lift his right-hand Colt, but the strength was leaking out of him like the blood that dribbled down his chin. Bodine reloaded his other Colt and held it in his left hand. He didn't think Utah was quite through. Not just yet. Over the years, the gunfighter had proved to be a tough man to kill. Bodine watched as Utah, on his knees on the floor, slipped his left hand toward his belt buckle. Probably carrying a derringer, Bodine thought.
Who sent you, Utah?
You had it pegged right, Bodine.
Utah didn't have long. The blood from his mouth was tinged with pink, indicating he was not only gut shot, but lung shot.
Tom Thomas?
Yeah.
You want me to give him any messages before I kill him?
Bodine waited for the man to gather enough strength to talk. His left hand had reached the belt buckle, and the fingers were fumbling.
You can give him a message when you both get to hell, Bodine.
Utah Jack Noyes grabbed for the two-shot derringer. Bodine replaced the spent brass and holstered his Colt, walking toward the batwing doors and some fresh air. Bodine didn't look back as he rode out of the little settlement on the Yellowstone, but he knew his reputation had taken another giant step, and it was a renown he had never sought. He made camp for the evening, eating a can of beans and some bread he'd bought the day before from a farmer's wife who looked like she could use the dime. Bodine was rolled in his blankets and sound asleep as darkness spread over the land. On the second day of his wait beside the Yellowstone, Bodine's vigilance paid off as the Josephine steamed into view. The steamer was commanded by Captain Marsh Grant, had a capacity of 300 tons and a crew of 12 officers and 31 men. And Captain Grant didn't like the idea of tying up just because one man was waving at them from the shore. General Sheridan wouldn't appreciate the delay.
That's Bodine, General. If he wants to talk, it's important.
Tie it up.
General Sheridan was stunned when he heard Bodine's news.
You can't be serious, man.
I got the Crow and Sioux to agree not to fight until this expedition is over, General, but only on the stipulation that these phony soldiers are arrested. Sitting Bull and Big Face sent representatives to meet with Two Wolves and me in Lost Valley. Fat Bear and Running Man agreed to the plan. And by the way, Tom Thomas hired 3 men to kill me. They won't be reporting back to him.
You killed all 3 of them?
Yeah. They were too confident and too damn slow. Utah Jack Noyes confirmed that it was Thomas who hired them to stop me.
We'll be able to stop this so-called army, Bodine. But we'll never be able to get a conviction against Tom Thomas.
Why?
He's a big man, Bodine. Lots of friends back in Washington, including a lot of pull within the War Department. There are certain members of Congress who would not be opposed to a plan such as the one you just described, no matter what the cost in human life. And, I'll be willing to admit, some Army officers as well.
And they're fools. The Indians have been pushed just about as far as they're going to be pushed. You know Johnny come lately out here, General. So when I tell you that a gathering has been called, I don't have to tell you what that means.
Do you know where it's been called?
If I had to take a guess, I'd say somewhere in the Rosebuds, somewhere between the Big Horn and the Little Big Horn. But that doesn't make any difference. It isn't going to be a mass gathering, just the chiefs and sub-chiefs. If they don't want to be found, they won't be. Now listen to me. Big Face has agreed to abandon his camp, leaving the lodges in place and intact with a few braves behind to keep the fires burning. They'll slip out just before dawn on the morning of the attack. Two Wolves will let them know when Thomas's men get into position on the ridges around the camp.
We'll be about a mile behind them. I've got 3 companies of battle-tested men with me. Where do you want us to tie up?
Bodine pointed to a spot along the river.
Right there. I checked it out coming up here. Even if Thomas has spotters along the river, they won't be alarmed by your docking there. It's a natural spot with good cover. You're going to have to force march your men to here.
Bodine jammed a finger against the map.
If we have to engage in a fight with any men along the river, it'll be a dead giveaway.
You won't have to, because there won't be any of Thomas's men there.
How can you be so sure?
Because I'll be there first.
On the way back to where he would rendezvous with the army along the Yellowstone, Bodine came upon a small hunting party of Sioux. He drew a map on a piece of paper.
Ride to Two Wolves. Give him this. Then tell Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse the army will be docking and marching inland to arrest the men dressed up like soldiers. Ride like the wind.
Bodine left the banks of the river and rode inland for several miles before once more turning west. He knew that Thomas had men spotted along the river, and he wanted them to see the Josephine as she steamed along. He didn't want Thomas's men to see him. When he reached the area adjacent to the proposed landing site, Bodine turned south. He found a natural three-sided corral for Rowdy with water and graze for several days and covered the entrance with brush and small limbs, leaving it so Rowdy could break out easily enough if Bodine did not return before the water ran out. He left his boots and slipped on moccasins. Bodine put together a small packet of food, slung his canteen, and picked up his Winchester.
I'll be back, Rowdy.
The big stallion showed him his teeth and returned to grazing. Bodine took his time working his way toward the river. He wanted to get there just about at midday, and then he would begin his deadly work. To the south and west of Bodine's position, Two Wolves was keeping a wary eye on Lone Dog and the band of young braves who looked to him for leadership. Two Wolves didn't trust Lone Dog. Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse didn't trust him either. Lone Dog should have been named Mad Dog. He saw himself as a great chief, when in reality, he was simple. But out of that simpleness, or because of it, he was fearless in battle. That was why so many young braves followed him. Two Wolves was torn. But that was not an unnatural emotion within the man. He had always been torn between his white side and his Indian side. There were so many lies told about him over and over again until a great many people believed them. Two Wolves had never led a band of Indians against settlers. He had never killed except when he was attacked. And even then, Two Wolves would try to make a run for it rather than fight. As he had said many times, he did not hate all whites, just some of them. He hated the broken promises and the greed. He hated what they were doing to the land, but understood that when whites came, they came to stay. So the land was carved up and planted and fenced. It was the spoilers whom he despised, men like Tom Thomas.
Be careful, brother. Your enemies are many.
Bodine spotted the first lookout easily. The man was busy rolling a cigarette. He cut the man's throat, lowering the body silently to the ground along the Elk River, the true name for the Yellowstone. Bodine took the second man out as silently as he did the first, and then waited in the cottonwoods for the fun to start.
Hey, Sonny, you got any tobacco? I'm plumb out.
Sonny was in no shape to reply. He lay draped over a log, his head nearly severed by the big, razor-sharp blade of Bodine's knife.
Boy, you better answer me. Tim, you better go check on Sonny. I think he's done gone to sleep.
Bodine waited silently. His knife had been cleaned and sheathed. He wanted this one alive. As the man passed Bodine's position, Bodine stood up and hit him in the back of the head with a rifle butt. When the man woke up, he had a splitting headache and found his world upside down. His hands were tied behind his back, and he was strung up by his heels, hanging from a tree limb.
Hey, partner. Hey, what are you fixing to do?
Build a fire.
Well, I can see that, but you're setting it right under my head.
That's right.
You're Bodine, ain't you?
That's right.
You were raised by them damn no-count Injuns.
That's half right.
What you gonna cook on that there fire?
Your head.
Oh, mister, I ain't done nothing to you. Besides, you can't do that to me. I'm a white man.
So is a man I found over near Cutter. What's your name?
Ford?
Well, Ford. You feel like talking to me?
Oh, I'm talking.
Ford knew Bodine's reputation. He didn't make threats lightly.
Who tortured George to death?
I don't know. I swear to God, I don't. Oh, God.
Bodine walked to the rope and slowly lowered Ford until his head was about a foot from the unlit fire. Bodine squatted down and struck a match.
Wait a goddamn minute. No, wait. I remember, okay? It was Clint Peters. Clint Peters, Stan Martin, and two guys named Bradley and Fergus.
Who do they work for?
Tom Thomas, I reckon. Well, they all do, but mostly were hired by Wacker Corrigan.
Who works for Thomas?
Sure.
Everything right on schedule for the attack on the Crow Village by Thomas's fake soldiers?
Oh, yeah. I knowed it wouldn't work. God, I just knowed it.
You tell me what you know, Ford. And when the army gets here, you're going to tell them, aren't you?
Oh, whatever you say, Bodine. You got the matches.
Bodine lowered Ford back down to the ground, but kept him tied securely all the rest of that day, that night, and part of the next day. When he heard the Josephine making its way down the river, he then strung the man back on the limb, head down over the still unlit fire. General Sheridan was less than pleased.
See here now, Bodine. This is barbaric.
So is the killing of innocent women and children. Talk to him, Ford.
I got nothing to say. Bodine made me say all them things because he's going to tell you, General, that I was... All right, I tell you. It was all Thomas's ID. I tell you everything, General. Just get me down and away from this goddamn heathen.
Men, take this person on board and get his story on paper. Have him sign it, have it witnessed, and then chain him hand and foot and lock him down. What is that disgusting odor, Bodine?
Dead bodies. I had to cut a couple of throats.
You really love them damn stinking redskins, don't you, Bodine?
Sergeant Whitehall, I have lost a great many personal friends on the western frontier, but I do not hate all Indians for that. Many of their ways not only seem savage to us, they are savage. But we are taking their way of life from them. You can hardly expect them to welcome us with tea and cookies. You joined the Union Army fresh out of Texas and fresh out of the Confederate Army. How did you feel when the Yankee Reconstructionists invaded Texas and took control of everything?
I hated every damn one of them and still do.
Bear that in mind before you start cursing Indians. Now get my horse and let's start moving. We've got a way to travel.
They made a cold camp that night, the meal consisting of hardtack and water, and were ready to move out long before dawn the next morning. Two Wolves had slipped into camp and was sleeping beside Bodine when he awakened. Chuckling, Bodine took his blood brother to meet the general.
How in the name of Billy Hell did he get into camp?
Walked in, General. Your guards were very alert, but being alert to a white man is a much different thing than to an Indian. It is as Bodine pointed out to me before we undertook this quest. The fake soldiers would never have slipped up on the camp of Big Face. The braves of Big Face would have killed them all long before they got into position. But even I agreed it was better handled this way.
Still, General, this gesture isn't going to do anything to mend our reputation with the tribes.
The Indian is going to be pushed and herded and killed, regardless of what happens here. When you take the Cheyenne away from their round teepees and put them into square houses, that will be the end of the family as we know it.
But that's nonsense, Two Wolves. You're an educated man. You know that's foolish.
The red side of me knows it is not foolish. The white side knows it is. But we will do our ghost dancing many times before you finally win. And I assure you, General, the Arrow Keeper has been very busy of late.
The Arrow Keeper?
Mahouts. They were once four arrows of great quality and workmanship. They are kept in the Arrow Keeper's lodge, wrapped in a piece of coyote fur. To see the arrows, one must bring gifts and have a valid reason to see them, such as war.
War is coming, General. You see, we lost two of the sacred arrows to the Pawnees many years ago. That is why such misfortune has fallen on us. Already some of the Cheyenne women are packing. On the trek to war, the entire camp moves, and the women have been praying to the sacred hat, Isiwan. If many more promises are broken, war is sure to come.
And which side will you be on, Two Wolves?
I don't know, General. I just don't know.
General Forsythe held his troops back while the counterfeit soldiers destroyed the Crow village with cannon fire and heavy raking from the Gatling guns. Dressed in uniforms, the 60-odd men mounted up and went charging into the burning and smoky village. They found no one.
We've been had.
No, we've been captured.
What the hell you mean, Josh?
The man pointed, and the commander's eyes followed his finger. The ridges were lined with troops from General Forsythe's command.
Son of a bitch!
The commander dropped his rifle to the ground and put his hands into the air. He was still cussing as the regular army made their way into the burning camp. General Forsythe ordered the counterfeit soldiers to be bound together with their hands tied behind their backs and special hand-picked men, Sergeant Whitehall not among them, to escort the prisoners back to the river to await transportation to Fort Buford to be tried in a court of law.
We'll never be tried in no court, General, and you know it.
Perhaps not, but you're going to be damned uncomfortable for several days. I can assure you of that. Now empty your pockets. I want all your cash on the ground.
What?
You heard me. And when we're through with the horses, they'll be given to this Crow village as partial reparation for the damage you thugs have done. Now do it!
Bodine and Two Wolves stood in the background, smiling. They both knew it was a small victory. Even though the odds of any kind of prosecution of the captured men in the employ of Tom Thomas were slight, it was still counted as a victory.
Do you know this man who led the costumed soldiers?
His name is Walker. He's a gun hand from Texas, or so I hear. Rode with Bloody Bill Anderson's bunch for a time. He's pure scum.
He keeps staring at you.
He knows me. Right now, he's thinking about how much he wants to kill me.
You keep making enemies, you're going to surpass me in that department.
I'm sure getting there. Let's get out of here, brother. Our job is done.
Speaking of jobs...
I guess I'm out of one. That should make Lieutenant Gary happy. How about you?
I'm a no-count Indian, Bodine. I'll just go back to the mountain and see what happens.
How long has it been since you've seen your father?
My father and I don't see eye to eye on most things, Bodine. But when the whites try to take the land that was given him by the president, he will have no choice but to fight.
Those the words of Medicine Horse?
No, they're mine.
The Army's Yellowstone Expedition of 1875 continued on without further trouble. The Bighorn River, 127 miles above the Tongue, was reached on June 2nd. The expedition stopped at Pompey's Pillar, and conditions along the river worsened from that point on. On June 7th, the attempt to navigate farther was halted, and the order was given to turn back. When the Army passed the position of the destroyed village, they could see where the Crows had rebuilt their camp along the banks of the Yellowstone, and the camp had grown. General Forsythe made the recommendation that the mouth of the Tongue would be an excellent spot for a fort, right in the middle of Indian country and easily accessible by boat. The general further stated that a good wagon road through the Yellowstone Valley was necessary. By the time Forsythe got back to Fort Buford, Walker and his men had been released. No charges were to be brought. That the men had been wearing army uniforms was unfortunate, but not against the law, since all insignia had been removed and there was no law against a civilian militia acting on their own against hostiles. Indeed, it was written in the Constitution of the United States that a militia was allowed. Their only failing was in mistaking the Crow village for that of the Sioux. Apologies would be made and monies given to the Crow for the destruction of their village. Walker's militia was therefore legal and could be allowed to stand ready to repel hostiles. Bodine's father gave him the news.
Damn!
We're alone in our anger, son, just like we've always been. But think about this, boy. No Indians have bothered us in 15 years. Many others have not been so fortunate. We can't blame the whites for the way they feel. And really, no one should blame the Indians for their actions.
Dad, I'm not placing blame. I just think this whole country is about to explode. For sure, the town of Cutter is going to be wiped from the map.
That'd be no great loss.
He had lost several farmhands in gunfights in that gambler's haven.
I agree, Dad. But I won't stop there. A Sioux victory against Cutter would only fan the flames for braves like Lone Dog.
Is the gathering over in the Rosebuds?
I doubt it. I'm going to find two wolves. We'll ride over there for a look-see.
The father arched an eyebrow but offered no other comment, vocal or otherwise. If his son was going to ride into danger, he could not stop him. Bodine rode out to the mountains and waited. It wasn't long before his brother trotted into view.
We won't be welcome there, brother. They won't be disrespectful to us, but they will let us know that the gathering is none of our business.
I'm aware of that. I just want to see how many tribes are there.
I can tell you that. Sioux, Cheyenne, and a few Pawnee and Arapaho. Contrary Belly is there. Black Wolf and Last Bull. White Shield, Wolf That Has No Sense, Lone Dog, Chief Comes in Sight, and many more.
We'll just mosey over there like we didn't know what was going on. We'll act real surprised to see them.
They rode off the mountain and headed for the Rosebud Mountains, to a spot Bodine remembered not far from the banks of the Little Bighorn.
Are we going to visit Cutter?
Maybe on the trip back. What's in Cutter?
I thought it might be nice to see it one more time before Lone Dog destroys it.
You know something I don't?
Lone Dog has left the hunting grounds of the Sioux, with about 100 or so young braves. Not all of them Sioux.
Some Cheyenne?
Regrettably, yes. 25 or so.
You know where they are?
No. And I made it a point not to try and find out. I'm walking a narrow enough line as it is.
You're gonna have to step to one side sooner or later.
I try not to think about that. Hold up. I smell dust in the air.
They were traveling west, and the winds were blowing from the west. Bodine and two wolves headed deeper into the timber and dismounted, standing by their horses, holding their heads to keep them from whinnying when they caught the smell of other horses.
Field glasses in my saddlebags, two wolves. Right side. See what you can find out. I'll hold the horses.
Two wolves ran down to the thinning timberline. He was back in a moment and stuffed the field glasses back into the saddlebags.
Too late. They're on us. 10 of Walker's militia, heavily armed and looking for trouble.
You want to try to run for it?
Not this time, brother. Not this time.
They stepped away from their horses, two tall young men who looked enough alike to have sprung from the same loins. Two wolves carried a Colt 44, holstered, and Bodine knew he was very, very good with it. He also held a Winchester in his hands, the hammer eared back.
There they are! I told you I seen that damn troublemaking engine!
Bodine and two wolves separated, putting more distance between them. The horsemen faced them in the thin timber, all spread out in a line. Two wolves had recognized them. Bodine's hands were by his sides, very close to the butts of his 44s.
So we meet again.
We ain't got no truck with you, Bodine. Not unless you just want to buy in. But we're taking that damn engine in for questioning.
I doubt that. What do you want to question me for?
Two settler families was killed early yesterday morning. The Redskins moved west and slaughtered two more families early this morning.
What does that have to do with two wolves?
We figured it might be his bunch.
You idiot! I do not now, nor have I ever had any band of followers.
Don't you call me no idiot, you goddamn heathen savage!
All right. Two wolves has been with me for the last 2.5 days. You men are way out of line.
Now we aim to hang that damn engine, Bodine. Anyways, hell, you'd lie for him and everybody knows it.
You ain't nothing but an engine-loving son of...
Bodine blew him out of the saddle. Shifting his Colt... Bodine cleared another saddle just as the militiamen jerked iron. Two wolves' Winchester began spitting lead. The militiamen's horses reared. One rider was tossed to the ground, knocking him unconscious. Bodine jerked another man to the ground, clubbing him unconscious with his Colt. 15 seconds had passed, and the militiamen had 6 out of their original 10 on the ground, half of them hard hit.
Jesus God!
Bodine and two wolves leapt, taking two militiamen out of their saddles. The riderless horses collided with the horses of the two militiamen still in their saddles. Two wolves clubbed one of the riders on the back of the head with his rifle butt, knocking him to the ground, just as Bodine and the last militiaman shot it out. The militiaman lost as Bodine's slug struck him in the shoulder, numbing his arm. With a curse, he held up his one good hand in surrender.
I ain't believing this. I seen it, but I don't believe it.
Believe it. Now get down and let me patch that shoulder before you bleed to death. We got a long ride ahead of us. We're going to Cutter.
They rode into the whore town of Cutter just as the sun was sinking. Three of the militiamen were tied across their saddles. Two more were tied in their saddles to prevent them from falling out. They were unconscious, or nearly so. The rest had their hands tied behind their backs, the horses roped together in a line. They made a beeline for the saloon, where Tom Thomas stood in disgust.
Tom Thomas, brother.
Yeah. And he looks mad enough to eat an anvil. Well, you wanted to see Cutter.
They approached the dark-suited man.
By God! I'll see you men hang for this outrage!
Big sucker, isn't he? And younger than I thought.
Damn the both of you!
They reined up in front of Thomas.
You ugly. Tell him.
We started it, boss. It was fair, right down the line.
Where are the others?
What others?
The men with Bodine and this damn engine who mauled you people, you fool!
There ain't no others. Just these two.
Tom Thomas was so angry, he looked like he might explode. Any two men who could take out 10 of his best and come out of it unscathed. He shook that thought out of his head and turned away from the disgusting sight, stomping back into the saloon.
I'm hungry, brother. How about you?
I could eat.
Bodine turned Rowdy's head and walked him over to a stable. After seeing to the needs of their horses, Bodine and Two Wolves walked across the street to a cafe. The place became awfully quiet when the two men entered and sat down at a table. A red-faced, pus-gutted man standing behind the counter gave them the stink eye.
We don't serve no stinking Injuns in here.
Then place the food on my left side. That's the white side.
Oh, hell, Harry. Ain't no point kicking up a fuss about it.
The waitress picked up a menu and walked to the table, handing the menu to Two Wolves, smiling, who took it with his left hand.
What'll it be, boys?
Is he gonna cook it?
Nah, we got a chink cook. He's pretty good. I'd try the stew and apple pie. Got a fresh pot of coffee, too.
Sounds good to me.
Two Wolves noticed a huge man who had appeared on the boardwalk across the street. The waitress followed his eyes.
Stay away from that one, boys. He's pure poison. That's Whacker Corrigan. Came out here about 6 months ago from New York City. They call him Whacker because he likes to whack people.
Sounds like a real charmer.
Strong as a grizzly, and just about as mean, too.
She walked to the kitchen to place their orders. Bodine and Two Wolves ate the good stew, both of them keeping an eye on the man sitting on a barrel on the boardwalk across the street. Whacker had not taken his eyes off the cafe.
If it comes down to it, don't try to fight him with your fists up close. That'd be suicide. Pick up a club and bust him across the teeth.
You're reading my mind again.
With the meal finished and the table cleared, the men lingered over coffee.
We're in this den of crooks. Now what?
Feel like pressing your luck?
That's what we've been doing all day. Why change it now?
Let's settle the bill and go look into the lion's mouth, shall we?
The men left the cafe just as night was covering the land. They walked across the street to the Kitty Cat Saloon. Whacker Corrigan stood up and blocked the bat wings, a smile on his face.
Get out of the way, lard butt.
You feel up to moving me, lad?
If I have to.
By the Lord, I think you'd try it. All right, lads, I admire courage.
The behemoth shrugged and stepped to one side. Bodine and Two Wolves pushed open the bat wings and walked into the saloon. Tom Thomas stood by the bar, watching the pair with open contempt. He picked up his shot glass and took a sip of whiskey. Bodine and Two Wolves crossed to the bar.
Give me a beer.
And a glass of water.
Why don't you give him some whiskey, barkeep? Maybe then he could do a war dance for us.
Two Wolves didn't visibly react, but his eyes suddenly held a very dangerous glint.
Stinks in here. Smells like a dirty teepee to me.
Yeah, you reckon he ever takes a bath?
Sure don't smell like it.
Bodine turned to face the pair, his right hand held close to the butt of his .44.
You always fight that damn engine's battles for him, Bodine.
I never do, Thomas. Two Wolves is man enough to do that for himself, which is more than I can say for you.
Just what the hell do you mean by that, Bodine?
It means, Thomas, that you've got to hide behind a dozen or more two-bit gunhawks. You're yellow, a coward. You hide in the dark and wait to strike at someone's back. Is that plain enough for you?
Thomas's face turned three shades of red. Then, with a visible effort, he began calming himself. After a moment, a very tightly controlled smile cut his lips. A lean, hawk-faced man wearing two guns belted low and tied down pushed back his chair and stood up.
Let me take this pup, boss!
Sit down! All right. Bodine, you've insulted me in front of my men. You know what I have to do. I'm looking forward to it.
You're a two-bit operator who managed to hit it big out here by terrorizing small ranchers and forcing homesteaders off their land. How in the hell you managed to get so much pull in Washington is beyond me. You've been run out of every place you ever tried to alight, or left just before the authorities ran you out.
You're a damn stinking liar, Bodine!
And just before I stomp your guts out, your men will interfere.
No, they won't. I bullied me share of men and whipped every one of them, but I've taken no part ever in a gang up on one man. I'll stand by the Indian and make sure there's no interference from either side. Is that clear, Mr. Thomas?
Well, this is a side of you I was not aware of, Whacker. Very well. Of course there will be no interference. Those are my orders. Are they understood, men?
The gunslingers in the room nodded their heads. Whacker Corrigan motioned for two wolves to join him at the table.
I'd bring your water. I have no objection to a man who doesn't drink hard liquor.
Two wolves picked up his glass of water and joined the man at his table. Bodine took off his gun belt, rolled it up, and laid it on the table before two wolves. Tom Thomas removed his suit coat and rolled up his sleeves. Bodine watched him closely. Thomas was a big man, and in his prime. He outweighed Bodine by a good 30 pounds, and he was in excellent shape.
I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to kill you, Bodine, with my bare hands. I'm going to beat you to death.
Or maybe you'll put me to sleep with your flapping mouth.
You ready, Bodine?
Hell, I've been ready. I'm just waiting on you to work up enough courage to swing first, that's all.
Thomas stepped away from the bar and held up his fists in the classic boxer stance.
Oh, no.
Tom Thomas charged Bodine, who sidestepped and tripped the bigger man, clubbing him on the side of the head as he went down to the floor. Bodine kicked him twice in the side while he was down, and then stepped back, allowing the man to get to his boots.
Foul! Oh, harsh shit! This isn't the ring! This is a bare-knuckle striking gouge! There aren't any rules!
Thomas suddenly lunged at Bodine, the force of his charge knocking the smaller man down. Bodine rolled quickly, avoiding Thomas's boots, and sprang to his feet, smiling at the man.
Come on, ape face! Is this the best you can do? You fight like a dandy.
Thomas stepped in, swinging. Bodine went under the punches and landed two hard body shots to Thomas's stomach, then stepped back. Thomas hit Bodine with a left that knocked the man backward, the bar stopping him. Thomas rushed him and landed two more blows to the face and the stomach. Bodine twisted away and managed to land a right that jerked Thomas's head back. The men circled each other warily. Thomas had given up his boxer stance and now held his elbows in tight to his ribs and his fists up to protect his face. Bodine hit him with a combination in the belly that knocked the wind from him momentarily and followed that with a kick to the knee that staggered the big man. Thomas backed up, limping for a moment. Bodine stalked him, flipping hard, fast fists at the man, worrying him more than hurting him, for Thomas blocked most of them with his massive arms. The spectators in the barroom grew strangely quiet. Bodine had clearly taken charge. Bodine flattened Thomas's nose all over his face with a left that got through. Thomas shook his head and backed up. Bodine was relentless in his pursuit. He followed the bigger man, throwing punch after punch, bruising the arms of Thomas, hurting him, and occasionally getting a fist through to smash into Thomas's face. Thomas's lips were pulpy with blood. Thomas lashed out with a right that rocked Bodine's head back and followed that with a left to the gut that doubled Bodine over. Bodine recovered, shaking his head. He could taste blood in his mouth. Thomas's confidence returned, and he bulled toward Bodine, grinning. Bodine sidestepped, picked up a half-full whiskey bottle. Whiskey stinging his eyes, half-blind from the blood, Thomas had to retreat, his hands pawing at his face. Bodine went to work. Bodine smashed hammer blows at Thomas, each work-hardened fist taking its toll. Thomas's face was now a bloody mask. Gathering all his will, Thomas managed his second wind, and the two men stood toe-to-toe, hammering at one another. But Thomas's punches had lost their sting, and moment by moment, Bodine was pushing him back.
Fall, man, fall! You're whipped!
But Thomas would not fall. Bodine finally stepped back.
It's over, Thomas. I don't want to beat you to death.
Fight, you yellow pup!
Bodine backed up, clearing his head, and then getting set. He hit Thomas flush on the teeth with a solid straight right. Teeth flew from Thomas's mouth as he staggered back. Bodine followed that with a left that exploded against the man's jaw, nearly crossing Thomas's eyes. Bodine crossed that with another right that connected to the side of the man's jaw. Thomas's eyes began glazing over. Bodine hit Thomas in the center of his stomach, doubling the man over. He came up from the floor with a right to the jaw, and Thomas went flying. He rolled on the sawdust, over on his back, and lay still.
Good idea, Thomas. We'll just table this for now.
Dawn found two wolves and Bodine camped by a little creek a dozen miles from Cutter. Two wolves had heated water and had Bodine soak his hands in the hot water while he prowled for herbs to mix, to take the swelling and the stiffness out of his brother's hands.
It was a magnificent sight to see, Bodine, but rather silly.
Why?
You humiliated the man in front of his own men. Now he will have to kill you to save face.
He'll try. But it was worth it to see that big ape fall. What's the matter, brother?
I read the wind last night, Bodine. I tasted death and defeat and dishonor.
Bodine didn't argue the point. He'd had enough experience of the mystical beliefs of the various tribes to know that two wolves actually believed what he was saying.
Tell me what else.
I saw a line of hills over a little river. In the valley, hundreds of teepees, thousands of Indians, more than have ever gathered before. I saw a great battle, and then a great victory unfolding before me. I was witnessing the beginning of the end for my people.
Who were the Indians fighting against?
The army, Yellow Hair and his troops.
Custer's over 400 miles away, Two Wolves. The last I heard, he was up at Fort Abraham Lincoln up the Dakota Territory. He could be over in Nebraska.
I know. I am only telling you what I read on the wind.
I believe you. Why the fight?
Lies. Broken promises on both sides.
I believe that, too. What is this leading up to, brother?
My destiny. I am going home to my father. To my people. Where my father goes, I will go.
Did the wind tell you that?
My heart tells me this, Bodine. For a time, I wish to be left alone.
I understand. But I'm still going to the gathering.
You will find nothing there. It is over.
When will I see you again?
I don't know, Bodine. I hope it is not on the field of battle.
Medicine Horse will not fight the army, Two Wolves. He will take his people and leave.
If that is the case, I shall be with him. But I doubt that the great war chief Medicine Horse will run.
I hope he does, brother. For all our sakes.
Two Wolves walked to his horse and swung into the saddle. He looked back at Bodine.
Do not attempt to see me before the leaves turn, brother.
I won't.
With that, Two Wolves nodded his head and lifted his hand in farewell. Bodine stayed in camp that day, soaking his hands, applying the poultices to his hands, and doing a lot of thinking. He knew that wars with the Indians were still ahead. The Sioux and the Cheyenne were not going to lie down and let the whites walk all over them. As far as Bodine knew, he was still employed by the army, but he didn't know in what capacity. In the morning, he'd amble on over toward the Rosebuds and see about the gathering. Then, he'd head for the fort and check in with Colonel Travers. Bodine wandered around the Rosebuds for 2 days before coming to where the chiefs and sub-chiefs had held their gathering. He let Rowdy graze while he prowled around the area on foot. He found evidence of several tribes who had attended the gathering: Cheyenne, Blackfeet, and tribes of the Sioux, including Oglala, Brule, Sans Arcs, Hunkpapa, and Minneconjou. Bodine felt a myriad of emotions as he stood in the grassy valley. The whites were going to clear the west of hostiles. But who were the hostiles? Just whose land was it exactly? It was at times like these that Bodine's Indian teachings came to the surface to haunt him. He knew the Indian way of life could not continue, that its time was nearly over. He still could not help but feel some sorrow at that. Whether that sorrow was misplaced, he didn't know. He walked back to Rowdy and swung into the saddle. He rode into the small fort 2 days later. He had taken his time, following the tracks of Indian ponies until they split up, heading for the various camps. Lieutenant Gary gave him a dirty look as he rode in. Bodine ignored the man. He asked for Colonel Travers and was received immediately. The colonel shook his hand.
Bodine, you've played hell, man. Certain people in high places were not happy about you and Two Wolves shooting up Walker's patrol.
They opened the dance, Colonel. One of them called me a son of a bitch.
I'd have called him out for that. That slur was not told to me. Well, it's over. It can't be undone. How are your hands?
They're all right. I'm assuming you heard about the fight?
Oh, yes. And for that, you've made a bitter enemy, Bodine.
Bodine shrugged it off as unimportant.
Do you know who is responsible for the attacks on the settlers?
I'm sure it's Lone Dog and his bunch. He's gone renegade on us. About 75 young Sioux and 25 or so young Cheyenne.
How does Two Wolves feel about them and what they're doing?
Sad. As does, I suspect, Medicine Horse.
You've been roaming about amid the hostiles. Bring me up to date.
There's a big gathering over in the Rosebud Mountains. Sioux and Cheyenne and Blackfeet, mostly. This country is looking at war, Colonel. It all might blow up in our faces this afternoon, but I doubt it. They've got to talk first. And that's going to take a long time, probably well into fall. We're talking about more Indians than have ever gathered together in memory. Thousands.
Nonsense.
As you wish. But the way I see it, we've got two options. Just two. And we don't have much time for red tape. First, the government could put the Sioux and their allies, mainly the Cheyenne, on reservations and keep them there by armed force. Or second, the United States government could make a real, honest effort to obey the Indian treaties by staying off the Sioux and Cheyenne hunting grounds and stopping the prospecting of gold on their reservations. Sitting Bull has announced his intention to hold, by force, all the country west of the Missouri to the Rocky Mountains. And he's going to do it, Colonel. The Northern Pacific Railroad really ruffled his feathers.
Damn it, Bodine. Sitting Bull is wrong about the railroad. Red Cloud and the other chiefs agreed back in 68 not to oppose the building of those rails. Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse are in the wrong, and they must be dealt with. What side are you on?
I'm on the side of justice, Colonel.
I probably shouldn't tell you this, Bodine. But another expedition is being mounted to go into the Black Hills. They're going to make a geological survey to determine the extent of the mineral resources in that area.
God damn it! Do that and the Sioux will declare war.
They're already at war, Bodine, declared or not.
Oh, now I get it. Sure. The government wants to pour more settlers in the Black Hills under the guise of prospectors.
You said it, not I. Besides, I think you're wrong.
This expedition goes in and the Ogallala and the Hunkpapa will go to war.
The government will offer to buy the Black Hills and the area around it.
It's sacred land, Travers. They're not going to sell it. The government so graciously gave the Sioux land that was theirs to begin with. Now we're going to offer to buy it back?
Correct.
And when they refuse?
That'll be up to the War Department.
Bodine sat down and shook his head.
You can bet that the chiefs know of this. That was probably the main reason for the gathering.
How would they have found out about it?
Probably read it on the wind or saw it in a vision.
Nonsense.
You've been out here a long time, Colonel, but you still don't understand the Indians.
I don't believe in hobgoblins and the like, if that's what you mean.
I don't understand all that I know about the Indians, Colonel. but I've seen too much to doubt many of their visions.
That's ridiculous. A lot of claptrap and barbaric hooey.
May I borrow a paper and pen, Colonel?
Bodine dipped the pen in the inkwell and wrote for about a minute. He signed the paper, blew his signature dry, and handed the paper to Travers. The Colonel looked at it, his face tight.
This is firm, Bodine?
Yes.
Very well. I accept your resignation. This will go into your file. But I must warn you, from this moment on, you are a persona non grata on this post.
That's fine with me.
Where is Two Wolves?
That, Colonel, is none of your damn business.
I see. Very well. You have 15 minutes to clear this post.
I'll be going in 5.
Matthew!
Bodine turned around. Colonel Travers rose from behind his desk and walked toward him, holding out his hand. Bodine took it.
Forget the hard words. You're welcome back here at any time. You've done a lot of good work for us, and thanks for that.
You can retire right now, can't you, Colonel?
Yes. But I don't plan on it. Why?
Because I'd hate to see your scalp tied to the mane of a war pony.